This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
And I did a junior year abroad in Oxford, the same year that Bill Clinton was in Oxford, but I didn't smoke dope with him.
I didn't know what to do and not to do.
We really went through a spiritual awakening. We went through a egoic descent.
And to my astonishment, the prize pieces were the eyeballs.
It is rare, but it does happen.
And they were offered to me because I was the most guest-like in this occasion.
You know, getting so uptight about, like, order and how things are supposed to go.
I was told I could marry anyone as long as he wasn't a Republican, which unfortunately I did do and was a mistake.
Welcome. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, coming to you from our home turf in Sebastopol, California.
And here we have a nest of finches on our windowsill, and they're just as cute as Al. But I'm a little bit reluctant to talk about them because they don't really constitute a major social issue.
Unless they fall off.
We ought to be a little bit more significant here. I think they don't have any political consciousness. They just want the worm.
It's amazing. I had no idea that little birds were actually furry. I mean, these look like absolutely minute tan Angora kittens, except you can't tell which end is up.
Yeah. Somebody saw some promotion for this show, and it said, Journeys of Change. And they said, well, is that kind of touchy-feely? So I was a little bit reluctant to talk about the finches, you know. Are we really touchy-feely? Are we part of the great
now,
California self-improvement industry?
Now, come on. What's wrong with touching and what's wrong with feeling?
When you're watching the levels on the,
well,
on,
that's,
on the sound.
That's true, but, you know, we have lived all over the country in the 40-plus years that we've been together. And, you know, I don't think I can honestly recollect anybody that we've known any place who hasn't gotten to wherever they were at that point in their life without the most extraordinary number of switchbacks and improvisations and getting lost and having to find the key to a whole new door and you know, that's something that we all know about. It's not about going off onto your astral plane.
So we could talk about the glassy-winged sharpshooter, which does make transformational journeys, but everybody around this area knows who the glassy-winged sharpshooter is, and probably folks in Philadelphia do not care terribly much, except as it relates to airport security. So, rambling off the subject on Hitchhiking Off the Map. Our story.
Today, it's just one story. It's a true story about a fantasy. But we'd like to set this up and ask some questions.
These are questions.
There'll be a test on Tuesday.
These are questions. We won't have any experts offering their opinions. Just a moment of meditation.
Meditation music.
To think about the stories that you bring to the listening. Don't close your eyes if you're driving.
What was your greatest fantasy as a kid?
Your fantasy of going somewhere.
Did you ever tell a lie and you were astonished that they believed it?
Did you ever have to tell someone you told them a lie?
Did you ever do something just to prove you could, just for the sake of the challenge?
What is truth?
What living person do you most admire, and why?
What if I told you that none of that was true?
What's your craziest fantasy? What you'd really love to do if you could?
Do you like the song, Climb Every Mountain?
What about When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain?
Climb the highest mountain.
Go tell it on the mountain.
She'll be coming round the mountain.
How do you feel about mountains? Here's our story.
Besides the radio, we do live shows. and a lot of our work comes from stories people tell us. After one show, a year or so ago, I think, in Santa Rosa, a guy came up and said, "I've got a story for you." So this is about Sky Chaney and his climb up Mount Everest and his coming home.
Everest Camp 1. We'd been holed up in our tents in weather, did better than I thought on the ice fall, and just beat the storm. Feeling okay. Hubert checks the team's vitals and says Ralph and I are fine. Blowing like hell last night with winds that sound like 747 jets. None of the climbers or Sherpas are moving on from here, up or down, waiting for weather to ease before deciding what to do. Half of the team is already up at Camp 2.
Except that none of it happened.
Well, it started percolating in my mind before this year when I was messing around with my Photoshop program on my computer and creating pictures that were pieced together by images from different places. And I think at that point I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to make a journey using Photoshop and piece together images that tell a story? And then the beginning of this year, in March, I became 50 years old. And I'm at the point in my life where I'm thinking about, well, what can I do? What kind of journeys can I do and can I not do as I grow older? And there's a part of me that wanted to take a grand journey. And I think I put those two ideas together and decided with my brother as we were talking, well, why not do a journey to the Everest region? Our original plan was to go to Everest Base Camp and make it a cyber journey. And then we started joking around with each other, and I said, well, gosh, let's just go to the top. Of course, by the time we get there, nobody will believe us.
Sky is a psychotherapist in Northern California, and a friend of ours said that explains it all. But actually, he's a very analytic, rational guy, maybe with a blind spot.
The date is April 19th, 2001, and the subject line of this email is, "The Chaney brothers are Everest bound." The last few weeks have been very busy. I've been madly working out at the gym and riding my bike to get in good aerobic shape. The gear I need is almost together, although we plan to get more specialized gear in Kathmandu.
Sky isn't a couch potato. He's a wilderness backpacker, and he's climbed a couple of mountains. But consider, Everest requires the physical stamina of riding the Tour de France. So to his friends, his journey was incredible, but credible.
Well, we've been on the internet for a number of years, and so both of us had a pretty extensive email list of friends and even distant people that we'd been in contact with. And so we ended up sending it out to between 150 and 200 people that we rustled up. We found an internet cafe at Kathmandu, and I believe at that point, we found another one at Namche Bazaar, but from then on, we lucked out and contacted and met somebody who had a fancy laptop with a satellite connection, and we were connected up for the rest of the trip.
Now, as he speaks of this, he never says, "We pretended." Listening, you have to work really hard to remember, wait, this is a hoax.
We've been in Kathmandu a couple days. Unlike any place I've ever been. Everything is colorful, from the clothes to the meat in the market to the temples and the green hills surrounding the city. There's an odor in the city air that is hard to describe. Smoke, dung, spice, diesel fumes comes close but doesn't quite capture its essence.
We generally send out between two and three photos with every email so that people could actually see where we were. Then we took a helicopter to Lukla, which is a staging area for the trekking. And I think we have a picture here. I see we have a picture here of our yak with some gear on it so that people can see how we were traveling from Lukla on.
This is a couple days later on Tuesday, May 1st at Namche Bazaar. After the up and down trek getting here and arriving at 11,300 feet elevation, we decided to take a layover day to acclimatize. The rule is to rest a day for every 1,000 feet elevation gain. We aren't really going to be able to do that because these damn mountains are rising too fast, but we'd rather rest here than in the cold rock and snow that is coming up a little later this week.
A good con has a kind of beauty like mathematics. It's never forced. It happens really by accident. These ordinary guys snapping ordinary travel photos just happen to run into Dr. Hubert, who just happens to invite them to Everest Base Camp. Amazing. Can you believe it? And everybody did.
What an incredible week. Trekking for days up a deep river valley past ancient villages with the massive peaks getting larger and larger. The day before yesterday, we dragged ourselves into Everest Base Camp. The elevation here is 17,700 feet, and the air is so thin it feels like you're breathing through a straw. The final hill was a monumental effort for both of us. We practiced breathing 2 complete cycles per 1 step up, and that helped a bit once we got the rhythm. Just now we're sitting in the warmth of the base camp communications tent, having begged a laptop to input this email.
And then the way the con works, they add some audience participation, so you make the choice to buy in.
Along the way, we decided that we wanted to name our yak, and so we proposed to everybody that we were starting a Name the Yak contest. And all anybody would have to do would be to send us a name, and we would try the name out on the yak. And if the yak turned around and looked when we yelled his name, then that would be the yak's name. The prize for winning the yak naming contest was a genuine yak turd pen holder.
Hubert's physiological measurements indicate we're in good enough shape and condition to move higher on the mountain, and he's invited us to go up with him to Camp 1.
More amazing accidents. Hubert invited them to replace some ailing members of his team and got them the climbing permits. But as the brothers continued their ascent toward Camp Number 4, something else was happening. Their audience was really captured.
And when people found out that we were actually going to Camp 1, we had people who were concerned, be careful, that kind of thing. And getting these messages was starting to be difficult because we were sort of caught in the dilemma. On the one hand, we're going, my gosh, you know, our cyber journey is being perceived as real. How exciting. And at the other hand, beginning to feel pangs of guilt that some of our acquaintances and good friends are getting sucked into this journey. And here we are taking them on the journey.
But the pangs of guilt didn't interfere with the game.
Expected to be leaving by now, yet here we are, higher on the side of Everest than we ever imagined being. Not too steep, and glacier surface is so expansive and flat that we only had to set up Hubert's antennae twice. But doing this as we gasped for air was the challenge. Just slow down the pace and step, breath, step, breath, step.
This is an email sent by an elderly woman friend of mine from New Zealand. God be with you and keep you safe and strong for the descent. Thanks for the mail and the wonderful photos. I'll treasure them always. This is another friend of my brother's who emailed him. Really enjoying the ongoing electronic journal. I now have several people in the office who also gather around my monitor for the latest updates and photos.
And a disabled man was inspired to embark on a cross-country journey. Well, and this.
Unsubscribe. What this world needs right now is another phony like you and your brother.
But most people believed it, except for those who ran into Sky on the streets of Santa Rosa. For that matter, who was naive here? You create a terrific story. 50-year-old local boy does wonders. And then you're surprised when people really love it? Isn't the story one that you'd really like to believe?
In fact, I got caught up in the reality of it. I could just see and feel myself up there. I'd been monitoring other websites where people were actually climbing the mountain, and we had been building our messages based on other people's true experiences of that. And so I felt like I was actually up there in a figurative sense. I also had another strange experience. A friend of mine who was sure that I was on Everest called me, and I inadvertently picked up the phone without screening the call. And he said, "Sky, where are you?" And I said, "I'm up here at Camp 2. And he said, "What time of day is it anyway?" And I said, "It's in the middle of the night." And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry for calling you so late." And there's a strange pause. And then he goes, but.
On and on we climb above a carpet of glowing clouds. The night above us is spectacularly clear, jet black sky pierced by millions of stars, illuminating the biggest mountains in the world. Ascent commenced 526, 2100. Climbers and Cheneys out balcony or above, all in good shape. Sky up ahead, okay. Weather is holding. Receiving data from climbers. Good to go. Brothers summited Everest at 0910 this morning, 528.01. Clouds are closing in with light snow, all descending now on fixed ropes with GPS guidance. Hoping wind doesn't worsen. Due back by 1400. Success.
And that's where the second journey begins. Most people, when they found out the truth, when Sky posted photos of their surfboarding down Mount Everest with their Sherpa guides on their shoulders, or meeting the Dalai Lama, or the ticker tape parade with the president, sort of caught on and thought that was a great joke. But not everybody.
Yeah, some people were really angry. It was the coming down off the mountain and arriving back home that was the most difficult part, where the excitement of doing the cyber journey was mixed. Well, gosh, how do you deal with people who are angry and feel betrayed?
Sky, as I said, is a psychotherapist, so he tapes his own thoughts.
I said, "You know, this is a cyber journey, and I really didn't go to Everest." And she said, "You're kidding. You're kidding. You really went. You really went." And she just wouldn't believe it. But he got on and said, "Oh, you're back." And she said, "Yeah, he was just kidding the whole time. He did it on his computer." And then he said, yeah, okay. And through the pictures of the trip, and he was responding as if he was really believing it. And it turns out that he was believing it, that I was just joshing them about not going. Got in a real bitter and angry email about what I did. Felt betrayed and angry and can't understand why I would do such a thing. And just a very horrendous email, and emailed him back something.
And there were several other people that joined in and said that I'm not a person to be trusted anymore. And so I emailed them back and said that I would talk to them individually on the phone. And in all cases but one, my discussions with these people worked out okay, and that they were less angry with me after the discussion. There are a number of these people continue to say that I have made a mistake. And by then, hearing about some of the people's disillusionment and anger over the journey, we were having second thoughts about having done it. Another person told me that I had made a big mistake. He said that he had been passing the emails and pictures to his son in the second grade, and his son had been sharing the journey with all of his classmates in the second grade on a blow-by-blow basis. When I read that, there I could see the dark side of what we had done.
The thing he said was, "Well, that Washington thing was really impressive," and I confessed to him that it was simulated, and he sort of was very quiet about it, didn't respond with any kind of response, and asked him how he felt. He said he'd have to think about it. So I just wanted to add, send us a good email. We're working on a survey to end this thing, and I still have more phone calls to make. I better do some this morning.
The meaning of the project kept changing. It started out as something fun that we can do with our computers and create images that are creative and the fun of fooling people. And as it evolved, it became more real as we learned more about Everest and we found ourselves imagining ourselves up on the side of Everest and writing about it and getting feedback from people and friends about their concern for us and their joy and exhilaration that we were climbing the mountain. The meaning changed along the way, and on the way down and getting back down, when we had mixed responses from people and having to talk with these people and apologize to them for hurting their feelings, that was always a bind too, the apology, because I would apologize for hurting somebody, but not apologize for the project and the journey. We got sucked into the journey too, and during that period of time when we were at Camp 4 and climbing the mountain, I couldn't sleep very well that night, thinking that I had dreams about Everest. And in the morning when we posted a description of our journey, I was there on the side of the mountain, at least in my imagination, trudging in that snow and experiencing the frozen ropes and the wind and the cold and the beautiful vistas that are there that high up on the planet.
So it's a journey of innocent fun, of stumbling, of amazement, and then cleaning up the debris. In talking, I sensed that Skye was still struggling with the ethics, that the people who were most moved and inspired were the ones who stood to be hurt the most. Yet the fact that it was really magical, really fun, an unsettlement that hadn't yet sorted out. But one thing came through clearly.
I think I'm a lot more careful about what I believe, seeing how easy it is to construct a reality. And I seriously doubt our reality now. As I look at the news, I look at how easy it is to fabricate almost any occurrence that can happen and to shape the world the way we want to see it. And that's a little bit scary, but at the same time, it gives me the idea and the thought that I need to be responsible for the reality that I create for myself, because that's the world I live in.
So this is a creation that brings everything into question. The news, obviously, but even itself, this story. Do you really believe what we just concocted? Is there really a Skye Chaney? Did he really do this? Do I sound sincere? What do you really want to believe?
Being 50 is like discovering that you're on the side of Everest when you didn't intend to be. You find out that you're in a more dangerous place than you were when you were in your 20s and 30s, and you're looking for a direction as to where to go, whether you're going up or going down, and realizing that your time on the mountain is a lot more limited than it was when you were younger. As a matter of fact, I'm planning a trip to Nepal for this March, and I don't plan to go to base camp, but I plan to climb on some glaciers and maybe get up to 20,000 feet. I think it'll be fun sending emails back and wondering whether people will believe me or not.
Will they?
At this point, for many people, my credibility is rather low.
In Sevastopol, we were talking with Skye Chaney.
And that's our trip for this week. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map, a production of The Independent Eye, written and hosted by us, and music and engineering and catering by Elizabeth Fuller, who also built our recording studio. For CDs of our shows, or to listen to past shows, or just to contribute stories, visit our website at www.independenteye.org. And if you like the show, please call the station you're listening to and let them know. They have to make those heavy choices between music and news and experts telling you sound advice about your houseplants. So, or us. So give them a call and express your will.
Do it. I mean, it sounds kind of strange, but, you know, radio for a number of years has been consolidating and becoming more and more market-driven and networked and uniform, and now it's kind of swinging the other way. There's a lot that's going back to the individual voice and also to the community. And, you know, you who are listening to this, you are the community. So it's kind of nice to call up your friends at the radio station who are volunteering, for the most part, to do this, and let your voice be heard, so that, because community is conversation.
You may have some trouble getting through the phone tree.
Yeah, but it's a lot more fun than calling AT&T.
Yeah, but it's much appreciated.
Yeah. Next show, a couple plans their vacation in the wake of global terror, and a Hungarian woman talks about the borders she's crossed. This is Elizabeth Fuller
and Conrad Bishop offering an anonymous travel thought courtesy of www.quotationspage.com. Nobody trips over mountains. It is the small pebble that causes you to stumble. Pass all the pebbles in your path, and you will find you have crossed the mountain.
Wow.
We'll see you.
The last time I climbed Mount Shasta, there were three of us, and we got up, and we were on a narrow sort of knife ridge called the Green Ridge that goes up to the summit, and we all had crampons on, and it was early in the morning, and it was very icy, and I had my ice axe, and I'm not that good with an ice axe, and it was getting so steep that I realized that if the crampons broke loose, I probably would not be able to stop myself, and I'd be hurled down the side of a steep, icy mountainside. And since then, I've decided I'm not going to do that kind of trip again. I want to be a little more conservative with my mountain climbing.